Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this summer we have been continuing our series on halachic men. We're trying to figure out how the life and times of various poskim impacted on the way they, quote-unquote, for lack of a better term, do halacha. That's our conversation this summer. Now we focus on the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan. Now we're doing the Chazon Ish. Last week we gave a brief overview of the Chazon Ish's life, when he lived, etc., who his teachers were, all interesting, all important in my opinion. Tonight I want to talk about like the substance of the Chazon Ish. Right? The Chazon Ish is a Jew about Allah. That's who the Chazon Ish was. The Chazon Ish wrote a tiny little book called Amunos Hudeos, which is like a work of philosophy / hashgafa, but ultimately, for the Chazon Ish, halacha is the be-all and end-all. And if what we could do is try to figure out how the Chazon Ish learned halacha, we would understand a great deal about the Chazon Ish, and hopefully it will inspire us to actually open the Chazon Ish and get a sense of how he learned. So that is tonight's topic. Now, it's worth noting, like we pointed out, that the Chazon Ish was a Jew who never really went to yeshiva. When I add the word really, the idea is that the Chazon Ish, according to tradition, this mentioned in all of his biographies, at one point in time, the Chazon Ish did go to yeshiva. Either he went to study in Voloshin, according to some traditions, or according to other traditions, he went to learn by Reb Chaim, after Reb Chaim already was no longer in Voloshin, and Reb Chaim was already in Brisk, and the Chazon Ish went to Reb Chaim. And it's clear that it didn't work. The Chazon Ish left. Now, why the Chazon Ish left is a subject that the biographers discuss, whether it's because he was worried that the chevra, that the student group, was not good enough, whether it's because he felt certain chumras that he wanted to maintain in terms of not eating chadash, not eating new grains. Maybe he couldn't maintain those chumras, or maybe it's because the Chazon Ish didn't like the style of learning that Reb Chaim had. Now, we know from later on, when the Chazon Ish was in Sataivitz, at that point, once upon a time, Reb Itzel Ponovitcher came to town, and he gave a drasha in town, and the Chazon Ish felt it's all fake, it's all wrong. He walked up, he was sitting in the back row, according to one tradition, he walked up to the front, pulled out a Yerushalmi shkolem, pointed to the line that the entire shir was against, and walked out of the base medrash. End of conversation. So the Chazon Ish really, did not like the approach of learning, the analytical approach, the yeshivish approach, the approach of learning that's most often associated with Reb Chaim. The Chazon Ish felt that approach is, boneheaded. That approach is just, it's not correct. That's really what the Chazon Ish felt. Okay, so we're going to talk about that right now. Now, the Chazon Ish, these stories are from the early life of the Chazon Ish when he was in Europe. 1933, Chazon Ish moves to Eretz Yisrael, and the Chazon Ish becomes Gadol Hador in Eretz Yisrael. When the Chazon Ish is Gadol Hador in Eretz Yisrael, what happened was yeshiva bachrim from all across the country used to go and visit the Chazon Ish and speak to the Chazon Ish in learning. My father told me, when he went to Eretz Yisrael, right after Kom Hamdina, my grandfather gave my father instructions that he should visit Gedolei Yisrael. He should go and meet people. That's why my father actually took a shower in Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's house. There weren't that many hot showers in Yerushalayim in those days. My father knocked on Rabbi Zalman's door on a Friday afternoon. They asked him, "What are you doing here? Do you want to take a shower?" My father's like, "Sure, what the heck, I'll take a shower." he was not, and he's still, Baruch Hashem, he's not so shy. He went to various gedolim. He went to see the Chazon Ish. This is what yeshiva bachrim did in those days. My father remembers, like it says in all the biographies, he goes to the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was weak. He used to sit, like, it wasn't really a bed. It was more like an easy chair. He was sitting in the easy chair learning all the time. And people came and they spoke to him in learning. That was the Chazon Ish. That was the story. Now, yeshiva guys from all across the country would come and speak to the Chazon Ish in learning. And they try to show the Chazon Ish the style of learning that is prevalent in yeshivas, the brisker analytical method. And the Chazon Ish really didn't go for it. the Chazon Ish drafted notes on the back of Reb Chaim's Sefer. They are called the Hagos of the Chazon Ish on Reb Chaim, the comments that Reb Chazon Ish has on Reb Chaim. And these notes reflect the fact that the Chazon Ish and Reb Chaim had diametrically, I don't want to say opposed, but really, really different styles in learning. Right? That's really what you see from these notes that the Chazon Ish has on Reb Chaim. Just to give you an example, this is an example that, again, almost everything that we are quoting, to some extent or another, everything about the Chazon Ish is found inside this massive 1,000-page book about the Chazon Ish with the catchy title, HaChazon Ish, written by Dr. Benny Brown, a really, really, really good and very, very, very long book. Now, Benny Brown, just to give an illustration of the differences between Reb Chaim's approach to learning and the Chazon Ish's approach to learning, picks on one of the more famous Reb Chaims at the beginning of the Sefer. Let's just review for a minute. Briskers, right? This will be relevant for halacha right now, so pay attention. Briskers are into creating a concept, or a construct, I should say, called Tzvei Dinim. Briskers are into saying that this idea that seems to be the same, oftentimes you have the same word, right? But it don't mean the same thing in both places. Right? The same term means X over here and Y over here. That is a classic Brisker method of analysis. Reb Chaim used this all the time. All the time. Now, one famous example, Tzvei Dinim, comes up in the context of davening. The Rambam tells us in the fourth parak of Hilchos Tefillah that when a person davens, the person needs to have a number of things, the Rambam says, are ma'akev in davening. A number of things, if I daven and I don't have them, or if I have them in the negative, however you want to say it, my davening is null and void. It's as if I didn't daven. One of those things that the Rambam includes in that is kavana. If I don't have proper intention when I daven, my davening doesn't count. Says Reb Chaim, you read that Rambam in Perek Dalek, you get an impression that you need this kavana in the entire tefillah. When I'm davening Shmon Esrei, the entire time I need kavana. But then I open the Rambam in the 10th Perek of Hilchos Tefillah, and the Rambam over there says, whoa, no siri. You only need to have kavana, you only need to have intention in the first brach of Shmona Esrei. When I say the first blessing in Shmona Esrei until Magen Avraham, then I have to have kavana. But if I don't have kavana in Rifa'enu, I should probably clap al chait. I'm probably not like the ideal Jew who they would put on the Jewish $10 bill, whatever it is. But the same time, right, I'm still davening. Davening without kavana still is davening. So Reb Chaim is very bothered by this question, and Reb Chaim answers that there's tzvei dinim. There's two types of kavana. One type of kavana is the kavana of translating the words. When I say Baruch Atah Hashem, I have to know that that means blessed art thou, Lord, or whatever it means in normal English, right? That type of kavana, kavana for the translation of the words, that's only required in the first bracha of Shmona Esrei. However, kavana of Amid or of Neshem, kavana that I know that when I am praying, I am speaking to the Lord, right? So that kavana, says Reb Chaim, is ma'akev in all of davening. A famous Reb Chaim, Tzvei Dinim, there are two types of kavana, right? One kavana is for the entire davening, that means that I know I'm speaking to God. The other kavana is kavana of, the second type of kavana, says Reb Chaim, is kavana of translation of the words. Right? Tzvei Dinim kavana, yeah, Ben.
Doesn't there be like, I don't know, with no respect to Chaim, isn't it obvious that there were Rambam had two different things in mind?
That what?
I know this is a classic example of why, and maybe even like primitive in some respect, but like, isn't it obvious that Rambam had two different, is it like, didn't he have to, otherwise he didn't realize what he said in one place or the other, like.
So, there seems to be an obvious contradiction in the Rambam, and you're saying, if there's a contradiction, how else could I resolve it? So you wait a minute, I'll tell you how the Chazon Ish resolves the contradiction differently than Reb Chaim. Right? But Reb Chaim, in classic Brisker methodology, says, Tzvei Dinim, two different types of Kavana. Comes along the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish says, hold it, hold it, hold it. This doesn't make any sense. You're telling me that the entire time I'm davening, I have to imagine that I'm speaking to God? Well, if that's the case, then I can't have kavanah for the words. Because the two types of kavanah are mutually exclusive. Says the Chazon Ish, in a certain type of philosophical understanding, the Chazon Ish says, you can't possibly have the kavanah for both things. That's point one. It's not possible. He writes, and I'm quoting from the notes that Reb Chaim has, the notes that the Chazon Ish has in Reb Chaim. He says, Zehu davar she'i efshar. And the Gemara says, "Iyun tefila something ain't adam nitzol b'chol yom." In other words, what Reb Chaim is saying is that the Gemara says that no one has complete concentration in davening. According to Reb Chaim, if I'm not yotzig davening without an awareness I'm speaking to Hashem the entire time, so that means I'm not davening. Says the Chazon Ish, that means that no one is yotzig davening. That can't be. Now, so one question is just like from a basic human perspective, no one does it. Also, the Chazon Ish asks, but you can't have both things in mind. So therefore, the Chazon Ish comes up with an answer that there's really no contradiction in the Rambam. The Rambam says the Kavana is ma'akev in tefillah. That's what the Rambam says in Perek Dalet. But he doesn't mean Kavana is ma'akev in entire davening. No! You have to read the Rambam like a complete unit. When the Rambam says that having in mind kavanah, proper intention, is necessary for davening, what that means, says the Chazon Ish, is, yeah, the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, kavanah is ma'akev. Beyond that, it's not ma'akev. Right? In other words, says the Chazon Ish, when you read a Rambam, you don't just focus on the limited Rambam in front of you, you look at the bigger picture. And the bigger picture in the Rambam is, right, putting Perek Dalet together with Perek Yod. That's where the Chazon Ish. Now, the Chazon Ish is less focused on the individual words in that Rambam. And he's much more focused. I know I didn't print this Rambam out for you, but that's because I thought this would be a very brief point. But he's much more focused on looking at the broader picture. You have to know the entire, you have to have a complete perspective. Now, if we would just put this in different terms for a second, briskers are known for a focus on analytics, on iyun, on deep penetrating meaning, and they are less worried about the bikiyus, about having a complete scope of everything. It's much more about understanding and properly understanding the text in front of me. No? The Chazon Ish is taking the opposite approach. He's saying, no, what you really need is bekiyus more than iyun. You really need a broader scope. And this comes out in a letter the Chazon Ish writes. This is the third source on the sheet. Yeah. So, how come the Rambam divides one up in Perek Dalet and one up in Perek Yud? The Rambam Perek Dalet is giving a broad overview to all of you, saying the following things are ma'akev in davening. Then he gets to the specifics in the later prakim. He has 10 things that are ma'akev in tefillah, and he goes through them all the prakim from Perek Dalet through Perek Yud. Right? When he gets to Perek Yud, he explains what is kavanah. Right? That's what the Chazon Ish understands of the Rambam. That the Rambam is explaining himself. No? Now, look at the Chazon Ish in this letter. These are from, we mentioned the letters of the Chazon Ish, the Igros Chazon Ish. It's a very hard book to use because we don't know who the letters are written to. And also when Rav Greineman, who was a brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish, published the Igros Chazon Ish, he also published not the complete version of the letters. There's a lot of ellipses and dot, dot, dots and stuff like that. Now sometimes, okay, that's like personal stuff, it's not relevant, but sometimes we just know what's missing. Like, if I'm a historian and I want to understand the complete letter, and I don't have the complete letter, my hands are tied. So, in one of these letters of the Chazon Ish, this one's in Chelek Av Simin Yud Aleph, the Chazon Ish basically makes his pitch for Bekiyas. Ein hari'iya amitis, rak im hishkifa al ha-reishis va'al ha-acharis. A complete vision. A vision is only true if you see from the beginning to the end. If you see everything. Ve'ein ha-mishpat emes, im lo rashma eino al-mocho, es kol ha-ufek b'skira achas. And mishpat, which means probably judgment, cannot be true unless the eye is focused on the entire horizon in one swoop. What the Chazon Ish is saying is effectively that my derech, my approach to learning, is an approach that involves knowing everything. It is decidedly anti-Brisker in this sense. Now, the Brisker methodology, like we mentioned a few times, is coming about as a response to the deterioration of the traditional community. Haskalah is exciting. The average yeshiva bacher felt really bored, right? The entire yeshiva movement is a response to Haskalah. Certainly the Brisker approach to learning that Reb Chaim developed is a response to, okay guys, okay Orthodox Jews, life is boring, you have opportunities now, you could go out to university, you can earn, right, a good living, walls of the ghetto are down, tachlis, right, you gotta make Torah exciting. Reb Chaim made Torah very exciting. This is about truth. And the Chazon Ish says, right, and by the way, they say that Reb Chaim from the Sefer is Reb Chaim. The real Reb Chaim was the way he presented a shiur. He was captivating. He was exciting. You come, you hear a kasha, you're pulling your hair out. Then you hear the terrors, it's like, wow! Anyone who went to the Rav Shirim also, no? They say about the Rav that it was like a fire. It was just unbelievable. He'd give you like a yardstick, he'd give me 5-6 kashas, and then one teretz to answer all of them. Explain, unbelievable. Tremendous. Okay, harim, like dealing, really coming up with new concepts. Amazing. And that was the excitement. But you read some of the written Torah of the Rav, I have to admit, it doesn't seem that exciting. No? Because the written word is less. The Chazon Ish is not into presentation. Chazon Ish never said shiur, obviously. The Chazon Ish is into learning. And learning, says the Chazon Ish, the MS has to be with a complete, total vision, etc. Yeah? That's the second point I want to get to. So, the Chazon Ish has one fundamental objection to the Brisker methodology, which is, like, this whole Tzvei Dinim thing, too exciting, it's not MS. MS means penetration. I remember my Rosh Hashiva when I was in Yavne, Rav Goldwicht, Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht, Rosh Hashiva used to always say over from the Chazon Ish, that sometimes you read the Torah of the Rishonim, and it looks so difficult and so dochuk. And you read the Torah of the Achronim, and it's so exciting. And how could that be? So Rav Goldberg said that he heard from the Chazon Ish, and the answer is that sometimes, you know, you have a gigantic window, and it looks like a gigantic door. It looks like you could go right through it. And you go through it. But turns out that there's another wall right behind it. And you're not really getting anywhere. But the teeny little hole that goes all the way through all of the doors and windows and walls, goes through and through, that penetrates everything, and that's the Torah of the Rishonim. The Rishonim, right, have this vision from the beginning to the end, and they can get you to the finish line. But the Achronim don't get you to the finish line, no? It might be brilliant, but you hit a brick wall. You hit a brick wall. That's what Rav Goldwicht used to say on the Chazon Ish. And that's all a shitasel. It's got to be a complete vision. So one point is opposition to this methodology. Part of opposition to Reb Chaim's methodology, though, is more fundamental. I'm sure all of you in this room know that there's a member of our shul named Dr. Sarah Rieger. Dr. Sarah Rieger had a very, very famous grandfather. His name was Reb Simcha Zelig. Reb Simcha Zelig was the dayan in Brisk. Let me ask, why did they need a dayan in Brisk? Wasn't Reb Chaim the rabbi? Why did they need a dayan? Now, I know in Broyers you have the Rav and you have dayanim. I understand that. But that's because the assumption is that the Kehillah has so much going on with all the Hashgacha and the Mikvah and on the Kashrus that you need dayanim also. But, obviously, Washington Heights is much bigger than Brisk was, no? That's the assumption. In Brisk, in most communities, you didn't have a Rav and a Dayan. No? Most communities, you had a Rav. and the Rav Paskin Shailas. How come in Brisk you have a Rav who's not a Dayan? The answer is that Reb Chaim didn't Paskin Shailas. Right?
Just like his grandson,
which is amazing that the Rav is called the Rav. Right? When you think about it, it's really an amazing thing that they called Rav Soloveitchik the Rav. Rav Soloveitchik also, by temperament, didn't want to be a posek. He was forced into the position because modern Orthodoxy needed him. But he wanted to say Pilpo Shiurim. He wanted to explain Dinam of Shtaros. He didn't want to talk about Chitza and Shol. No? Oh. So now, let's go slowly. Brisk has a position called a Dayan that is separate from the Brisker position of Rav. Why that is true, Rav Zevin explains, is because Reb Chaim's methodology in learning, he was worried, would lead to Piskei Halacha that no one ever said before. Because Reb Chaim, with his analytical method, would sometimes end up in places that... There are two different ways of saying this. The traditional way that I heard as a kid is that Reb Chaim, because of his analytical method, could never be machriya. He couldn't decide who's right and who's wrong. Because he could always see both possibilities. That's the way I always heard as a kid. But if you read Reb Zevin in Ishim V'Shitos on page 48, Reb Zevin says that he thinks the real reason why you needed a die-in in Brisk is because Reb Chaim was worried that his methodology of learning would lead to conclusions against traditional halacha. And the story goes that Reb Chaim, when he'd have a shaila, sometimes would send a telegram to the Maharsham or to Reb Yitzchak Elchanan and would say, "Give me the answer, usher or mutter. Don't give me any reasons." Because Reb Chaim knew about himself that the moment you start giving him a reason, he's going to say, that's a reason. What about the thumb's going 15 different directions? No? So Reb Chaim is not a posek. Reb Chaim is a lamden. The split between lumdus and psak is an innovation of Reb Chaim. So far, so good? The Rav used to say that he's a malad. The Rav used to say he's a malad. That's a little bit, he meant that in a different sort of way. That's not really what we're getting at. But the fact is, there's a difference between being a Rosh Hashiva and being a Hosek, being a Dayan. Right? And that is an innovation that is from Reb Chaim. Yeah?
But every time he learns a Sugya, he gets a different answer.
Correct. My father-in-law likes to tell the story that he was in the Rav Shir, I think, for 7 years or something, and he was in the Shir for Shabbos twice. And at one point, the Rav said some pilpul about when you spill ink on top of letters and erasing it is going to be the Malach of Mochek. He was discussing it, and my father-in-law raised his hand and said, Rebbe, last time you said the opposite. So he goes, "Don't bother me with what I said, the way I'm trying to understand." Now, that's Reb Chaim. By the way, and the Rav has the best description of Reb Chaim in his work, Halachic Man. No? But the fact is, what Reb Chaim is doing is splitting between Halacha and Psak. So far, so good? That means that learning is different than Halacha. And by the way, in classic yeshivish Welt now, people who go into Psak Halacha are viewed as being inferior. Now, when I talk about yeshivish, I'm about super yeshivish, like Philly. If you go into Psak Halacha, you are viewed to be inferior. You're not like a real lamdin. Because a real lamdin, right, just reads Reb Reuven. So a real lamdin studies Reb Baruch Be'er. A real lamdin doesn't read the Shach and the Taz. A real lamdin certainly is not reading the Torah and the Beis Yosef. No? That is the way Reb Chaim influences yeshivas. For the Chazon Ish, this entire mahalach, this entire approach is, how do I say it, treif. The Chazon Ish feels that the goal of learning is lasuke shmeitza libe dehilchasa. I study Gemara to come to halachic conclusions. The Chazon Ish, they tell in the biographies that the way he would learn is he would insist on going over the Gemara, right? until they knew it really well. He insisted that whoever was learning with him would say it over by heart, read the Taisvis, and they'd say over the Gemara with the Taisvis. Right? You had to know the Gemara perfectly well, and what are the ideas that emerge from the Gemara without any questions? The goal is to learn Gemara to arrive at halachic conclusions. And every single essay in the Chazon Ish is massive ratings, 23 volumes, no? Can't remember his life. Now they're in around 10 volumes. They come out now, the classical son. So Chazon on every aspect of Torah, Zerua, Amor, Noshim, Nezikin, Kachim, Taharis, Shochun, Arbe, Chokshon, everything. Right? The Chazon Ish is rating on Tosefta's and Uktzin. No? Everything. But it's always the same thing. You always start with the sugya. What are the conclusions that emerge la halacha? And in some complicated areas of halacha, like in kilayim, who knows kilayim? The hardest mishnah is in Shas, no? And the Chazon Ish gives you a sikkum. He gives you a conclusion of what are the dinim that emerge from kilayim. Meiridik. Beautiful. Brilliant Chazon Ish, no? Brilliant Chazon Ish. So now what do we have here? We have the Chazon Ish saying that learning of Gemara and learning of Halacha is one and the same. You have Reb Chaim who's splitting between them. This impact on the way the Chazon Ish learns Halacha in a big time sort of way. No? Let's explain. The Chazon Ish originally did not want to pass in Shailas. Later on, he was forced to pass Shas once his Gadol Hadar status really solidified. We know about the Mir Yeshiva and how the Mir Yeshiva ended up in Shanghai, no? And the question that came up, of course, was, what do you do about Yom Kippur? What do you do about Yom Kippur? This is a question because of the international dateline. It's easy to be machmir for a regular Shabbos, but to be machmir for Yom Kippur and to fast both days, this is exceedingly difficult. By the way, the story of how the Mir Yeshiva got to Shanghai, my uncle, my mother's sister's first husband, was in the Mir. And I heard this story from a few people. I asked Rav Yankelevich about this story also. He didn't remember that it was with my uncle, but you remember this is the way the story happened, that the boys in the yeshiva got word that the Rashi yeshiva were going to leave. The Rashi yeshiva had visas for themselves, and they were going to leave, and they'd leave the Talmidim behind. And the boys in yeshiva had they didn't know what to do. This is a big problem. So my uncle, Yanko Ring, went over to the Rosh Hashiva one morning after davening, and he said, Rebbe, habich geher, das erfurt. I heard that you're going. So Rosh Hashiva is vos, something like, so what? So Yanko Ring, my uncle, said something to the effect of, ich sag, as oi be mir forin, oi be ir fort nicht. Either we also go, or you're not going. So Rosh Hashiva said, ir strashet mir, what, you're threatening me? So my uncle apparently kept his cool and said, ich strash it nicht, I'm not threatening. Oi mir vorin, oi mir fort nicht. Either we go or you're not going. Very simple. And apparently this became like a whole hubbaloo in the base medrash, and eventually the Rashi Yeshiva went and they persuaded Sugihara to get visas for all the Talmidim in the Yeshiva, not just for the Rashi Yeshiva and their family. That's the story. So the Mir and many other yeshivas were in Shanghai. The question of what you do for Yom Kippur came up. Some of the Gedolim of Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky passing out, the dateline is 12 hours away from Yerushalayim. The Chazon Ish, in a famous kuntris that he wrote. Now, I should say that the term kuntris in the Chazon Ish means that he wrote it as a separate work. It's not published as part of his work on Or Chaim, but it was like a separate work about the dateline. And the Chazon Ish basically argues that the dateline has to be that the center of the world runs through Yerushalayim, and the dateline is going to be 18 hours to the west of Yerushalayim. 6 hours to the east, 18 hours to the west. That's the way the Chazon Ish concluded. Now, why did the Chazon Ish conclude this way? So, he writes in this Kuntres Yudches Shaos, Vihinei, and he's responding to Rabbi Yechiel Michal. Hasefer sochim kushios al habal hamor al haruza, right? Your book concludes with questions on the bahamor. V'omnam ein hachras hadin tluya biyishav hakushis. We don't determine the halacha based on answering questions and not answering questions. All the questions of the world won't change the halacha. The din that is accepted from all the Rishonim. In other words, until here, in the first three sections, the Chazanish argues that there's really no machlokas among Rishonim. Some people quote a book Yesod Olam that he argues on the Kuzari, whatever. These are not like mainstream halachic texts. But the Chazanish says that all the questions are won't change the halacha that's accepted from all the Rishonim. And v'haran v'haritva b'chidushayhem hiskimu l'bahamor. Gam beperish hasugya. The Ran and the Ritva agree with the Bahamur about how to explain the Gemara. Imkein mekvuar hadavar gam beGemara. If that's the case, then it's clear in the Gemara. In other words, what the Chazanish is saying effectively is, you have kashas. Who cares? Effectively, halacha l'maisa. How do I pass? Can I pass based on the simple reading of a Gemara? The Ran and the Ritva understand the Gemara like a Bahamur, which is a, right, and that tells me that what? And that's how we're going to pass. And the date line is going to be 18 hours to the west, 6 hours to the east. That's what the Chazanish says. In other words, what the Chazanish is saying is that I pass in Gemara based on simple reading of Gemaras. I pass in Halacha based on simple reading of Gemaras. This is completely not analytical. It's not saying, oh, what does it mean? And how do I answer the questions? And going back and saying, no, Gemara. What does the Gemara say? End of conversation. Reb Chaim, in a bazillion years, would never take this type of methodology to answer a shayla, no? If I have kashas on an approach, even though that's why the Rishonim understand that, I would probably reinterpret. I'd probably, right? In a bazillion years, we never do that. Now that there's a word called a bazillion, but you understand. The Chai would never do that. The Chazanish paskins based on simple reading, of the Rishonim. The next letter that I give you of the Chazanish is a letter about the date line also. The Chazanish basically says that he doesn't really want a Paskin Shilas for everybody, right? Ukefi hergeli ani kosev derech limur. I want to stop on that line for a minute. He said, I don't really want a Paskin. Ha'inyan shofaneinu lo'yitin chofesh hashtika. This issue in front of us, the question of Yom Kippur and Shenkai, doesn't give me the vacation that of being silent. In other words, I really have to paskin. Good. Now, but I want to just talk about that line for a minute, which we spoke about briefly last week, which is kifi hergeli ani kosev derech limud. That's like a major line in Chazanish worldview. The Chazanish is saying, and many sources quote this, the Chazanish is saying, you know what? I write just As I'm learning, I write down a few things. I jot down some ideas as I'm learning. And the Chazanish on one occasion said, my sefer! You know what? The only reason I have my sefer is it's hard to read my handwriting. It's tough to type. So therefore you typeset the whole book. And you know what? Once you're typesetting it, you may as well publish a few copies. So Chazanish never put his name on it. It's notes. Notes of his learning. But it's learning that leads to halacha. It's not learning that's separate from halacha. And that is the Chazanish. Now, what that means, and in the Pesach Tavshin Ayin Dalet edition, you know there's this really fat journal called Yeshurun that comes out? It comes out from someone from the West Side. It is like responsible for this guy, Gottesman, I think, responsible for a very, very, very fine journal, this Yeshurun journal. So the journal Yeshurun has an article, I forgot the author's name, but he goes through the approaches of the Mishneh Brura versus the Chazanish to Halacha. Right? We spent a lot of time talking about the Mishneh Brura, and now I want to talk about the Chazanish. So we just distinguished between the Chazanish and Brisk. Now we're distinguishing between the Chazanish and the Mishneh Brura, which have a certain similarity in the sense that they both lionize the Gra. The Goyin is like king head honcho of how halacha is properly done. It's halacha el hamakoros, it's halacha going back to primary sources. But there's still a huge difference between the Chazanish and the Mishneh Brura, even though they are both trying to do something similar to what the Goyin did. No? Just a line they have here in letter Lamed Beis, a line that the Chazanish has about the Gra. Anu misyachsim lahagra b'shura shel Moshe Rabbeinu olav shalom. Ezra Olav HaShalom, Rebbe Ashi, HaRambam, HaGra, who nechshav ke'echa min harishonim. Right? In other words, think about think about what the Chazanish is saying over here. He's saying, we look at the Gra, like, here's the line of halachas, my Shrabbeel, this is a Gra. Boop! Right? It's all there. Gra's king. Gra's king. For the Mishnah Berurah also, we spoke about his obsession with the Gra, with Vilna, tremendous. But there's still a big difference. The difference relates to the fact that the Mishnah Berurah is written to be a halachic digest, no? Remember, Mishnah Berurah recognizes that society is beginning to decline. The role of the Rav is not what it used to be. Jews are moving to other communities, for example, America, places in Russia where there's no rabbis. He wants to write halachic books that everyone will be able to access and to read, even without a Rav. It's a halachic digest, a synopsis of the major positions. So he tells you what the Magen Avraham says, what the Elia Rabba says, what the Taz says. Right, that's Mishnah Berurah, correct? It's a digest. Chazan Ish is not a work that is a digest of all the major sources. The Chazan Ish is a work of his own research, going through the sugya from the Gemara through the Rishonim until he comes to the conclusion, halacha lemaisa, the way he did it, Gemara Rishonim, right? Totally different type of work. The Mishnah Berurah, some contend, Micha Berger has this contention in one of his articles, the Mishnah Berurah often, the Chafetz Chaim, as in Rabbi Yisroel Meir HaKoyen, did not do things that it says in the Mishnah Berurah. The family has the cup, not the same size as the way he paskin in the Mishnah Berurah. No, the Mishnah Berurah didn't wear tzitzis out, even though he writes it, the Chafetz Chaim didn't wear tzitzis out, even though he writes in Mishnah Berurah that you're supposed to wear your tzitzis out. The Mishnah Berurah is kind of very hesitant, maybe even slightly opposed to the construction of community Erevin. He himself built an Erev in Radin, no? What does this mean? That means that the role of the Mishnah Berurah is a halachic digest, not a halacha lemaisa work. No? It's not there, and the Mishnah Berurah himself could do things differently from what he wrote, because the book is not intended to give you what he, Rabbi Yisroel Meir HaKoyen, feels.
Many times he says he's machriya.
Many times he's machriya, sometimes he isn't, and sometimes he himself would act differently than what he wrote. Because the goal of the Mishnah Berurah is not to tell me what to do, what not to do. It's a digest. It's a halachic digest. Chazan Ish is a book of Chazan Ish's halacha. There is no such way of saying in a million years that the Chazan Ish didn't do what it said in the Chazan Ish. That can't possibly happen, because the Chazan Ish's entire life work is writing down how he got to these conclusions. Right? So this is one argument. That's one difference between the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazan Ish, which is very important. Good? Yeah.
I gave a Shabbos drush one time, an example. I think it was on Rabbi Chulu.
I did.
I think so.
Yeah.
The Chazan Ish said that you shouldn't have two people saying.
The Chazan Ish says that there's no need to, right?
Then one of his Talmidim writes like on a.
Some say the Chazan Ish himself did it. That might have been because what was standard practice where he was davening, but that's sort of just like a balancing act. In other words, sometimes I'll go. The Chazan Ish never said you. The Chazan Ish said there's no need to do it. But sometimes, right, I'll do stuff and there's no need to do because everyone else is doing it. Fine. Now, another difference. The Mishnah Berurah is not really a work of practical halacha in the sense of, you know, the really big contentious issues of his time were not decided by the Mishnah Berurah. Let me give you an example. Machine matzahs versus hand matzahs. Huge issue. How does the Mishnah Berurah deal with that issue? He writes, Ayin shuvah shayel meshev over here, 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 and here. He just gives you marim kolmos. He doesn't tell you what he thinks. Electricity. Huge issue. No? Huge issue. Using electricity on Shabbos. How does the Mishnah Berurah say? Dodges it. In the biography of the Mishnah Berurah, his son says, the father didn't want to get involved in contentious issues. He was worried that people aren't going to buy his book. He just wanted it to be a halachic guide just to get people to learn and to be able to come to their own conclusions on halacha, even places where there's no rabbis, etc. He doesn't deal with the issue of electricity. Questions that were contentious, questions between Hasidim and Misnagdim. Even though the Mishnah Berurah was really much closer to Litvak, but I didn't want to like rub it into the Hasidim. So he writes about, like, let's say, whether you say L'Shem Yichud before you're doing mitzvahs. He writes, some say you say L'Shem Yichud, Ayin Nodav Yehuda. Hey, Rabbi, what do you think? Ayin Nodav Yehuda. Hey, what does that mean? That means that the Mishnah Berurah is not telling you a real psak. No? On these big contentious issues, he's not telling you a psak. Chazanish. Right? Mishnah Berurah, for example, also, killing lice on Shabbos, very contentious issue in terms of the difference between halacha and science, because we know that lice actually do multiply. Mishnah Berurah just puts a classical paskim on it, killing lice on Shabbos, doesn't get involved in any of the modern conversation. Chazanish deals with these issues all the time. Again, Chazanish didn't want to deal with them in the sense of he didn't want paskin for others, but for himself, his learning, his conclusions of that, like he had very firm conclusions. Chazanish about electricity on Shabbos, right? Bona doi reisa, makam padish doi reisa, what? Very firm conclusions, right? It might not have been a halacha work in the sense of telling other people to do, but it's halacha work in terms of what I think he should do. That's what the Chazanish is. A very different type of work than the Mishnah Berurah. The Chazanish, unlike the Mishnah Berurah, is very into being Mevarer Metzius, no? So much of the Chazanish, I think, Kilayim, what's considered two species, what's one species? It's inconceivable the Mishnah Berurah would like sweat over these types of issues. Chazanish, every single issue that comes up, going down from the Gemara through all the Rishonim down to the detail, the Chazanish is Mevarer it. Right? Why? Halacham, I have to know what to do. He's not necessarily telling others, but it's a work of halacha, it's a work of chazanish halacha for himself. Oh, let me take this sheet, because, fine. So that is the next issue that I want to talk about in terms of the chazanish. So we did the chazanish versus Reb Chaim a little bit, the chazanish and the Mishnah Berurah, two different types of halachic work. And now I want to talk about one last aspect, which is another difference between the Chazanish and the Mishnah Berurah, but that connects us to modern academic study. Let me explain. The way Benny Brown phrases it is that, you know, the Chazanish doesn't directly respond to the Derech of Yeshivas unless you take these Gilyonos. By the way, the Gilyonos that the Chazanish wrote on Reb Chaim were not published until 1975. That's 21 years after the Chazanish is not there, they're published. The Chazanish knew about the yeshiva approach to learning, and he rejected it. He knew about Reb Chaim's approach, he rejected it. The Chazanish explicitly rejects the Derech of Moser. That's his work in Munam Bitachon. It's very explicit that he rejects Moser. The Chazanish also knew about the yeshiva style because his brother, who later was like a rav somewhere in Vilna, Reb Meir Karelitz, had studied in yeshiva, and he was in. So the Chazanish knew through his brother. He knew about academic study in all likelihood because he had a cousin who lived with him in his apartment. We mentioned that the Chazanish for a while was not living in the same town as his wife. His wife was still running around, and he was in Minsk. He lived in an apartment with a cousin named Professor Shaul Lieberman. The Chazanish learned with Reb Shaul Lieberman. They lived together. Reb Shaul Lieberman has a little monograph. He writes about my cousin the Chazanish, and he writes about waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, seeing the Chazanish sitting in bed, teeny little light, with his yarmulke on his head, thinking very deeply about sugyas and erevin. That's the Chazanish. Reb Shaul Lieberman and the Chazanish had a relationship. They exchanged letters with each other. How many letters? Mark Shapiro says this, not whatever it is. But they clearly had a relationship. The assumption that Benny Brown makes as a result is that the Chazanish had some exposure to academic study. Now, word about academic Talmud study. Academic study involves arriving at the correct text before anything else, no? If I want to study a text, I have to know Vush state. I want to study a Gemara. You think that's a Gemara, right? That's not a Gemara. That's a 19th century publication that is supposed to approximate the Gemara. That's what academics would say. The Vilna Shas is not the real Gemara. What's the real Gemara? Well, you have to compare the different manuscripted versions of the Gemara. There's only one manuscript version of all of Shas. Ksav Yad Minkin, it's called. The Munich manuscript, which is published in the work called Diktuke Sofer. No? Some Gedolei Yisrael loved the Diktuke Sofer. They said, best thing ever. It's mamish like sliced bread. It's amazing. Because it has, like, the manuscript. The Munich manuscript. Gevadik. Maybe this is like the authentic Shas. Right? Rabbi Yaakov Ellinger. Right? Gave smicha to Rabbina Hirsch, according to tradition. Yaakov Ellinger has a haskoma on the Diktuke Sofrim. Reb Nosson Notta Refor Reb Nerotz's work, Diktuke Sofrim, which is the Munich manuscript, with his notes, which rather he wrote when he was blind. Talk about a goyin olam. Right, Reb Nosson Notta Rabinovich, Refor Nosson Notta Reb Nerotz, whatever his name was, wrote the Diktuke Sofrim when he was blind at the end. Can't even imagine. It's almost like Beethoven being deaf. It's like it's almost as amazing. Think about it. What?
It's almost like what?
Like Beethoven writing.
Oh, okay.
Almost as amazing. The fact is, the Aruch Moner, Reb Yaakov Ellinger, wrote a haskama on the Diktuke Sofrim. The Shaul Meshev, Reb Yosef Shaul Nathanson, wrote a haskama on the Diktuke Sofrim. Many Gedolim were really into it. Today, if you go to a standard yeshiva, you will maybe have a Diktuke Sofrim in the bottom left corner, all the way in the back of the third story, Ezra's Noshim. Maybe. It's not used in regular yeshivas. I remember one year at an Orthodox forum, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zechon Lefracha, spoke about how he felt that the next frontier for Brisker Derech HaLimud would be uncovering different Kisvei Yad and using Lumdis in Kisvei Yad. Now that's an amazing thing. In other words, what Reb Aaron was saying is that if the goal of learning, like in the Reb Chaim world, learning Gemara is separate from Halacha, so generating additional possibilities is a great thing because it's exciting. I can find more possibilities if I have additional Kisvei Yad. That's what Reb Aaron said once, no? Tremendous. Beautiful. Chazon Ish. Really, really not into the Munich manuscript. He's really not into the Diktuke Sofrim. Some suggest that the reason why the Chazon Ish is opposed to the Diktuke Sofrim, well, I won't say it like that, but I'll leave that sentence cut off. But the Chazon Ish is really opposed to Diktuke Sofrim. Let me just give you a few proofs that the Chazon Ish is really opposed to this. I have in English, okay? This is a translation from one of the letters of the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish writes, think to yourself, when we have three manuscripts before us, two are identical. We accept the two and ignore the single manuscript. Who can tell us that the Munich manuscript is not the one that was nullified by the majority of manuscripts in its time? Who is to tell us that it was not known to be inaccurate? Says the Chazon Ish, academic Talmud, which is based on arriving at the correct text based on the Kisvei Yad. So Chazon says, Mehichatesi, first of all, philologically, who assumes, why should I assume that the manuscript is a more correct version than the printed Shas? That's one point. Then the Chazon Ish in Letter Lamed Beis begins to punch even harder. Lahagia Begmar Piksav Yad Minkin. If you want to change the text of the Gemara based on the Munich manuscript, you should ask, V'chi chol chach mehador mizman havishonim ad achshav kulam lo amdu al ha-emes v'me shesofer echa ta'a v'hosef devar milibo v'hechshol askoa chachomim. Right? In other words, says the Chazon Ish, people want to change the Gemara's text based on these manuscripts. That means that everyone made a mistake until now. V'ani lo mehev aloi mahamonam. I don't believe them. Right? Ksav yah choy b'yad of Yishonim. Umasunav shom aleihem. Vashu chosi yisbashel tishtak yotom Yisrael. Hegina aleihem. It should be hegina na hechina. Basically, the Chazon Ish is saying something to this effect. A few points. First of all, the first point he makes is that who says the manuscript is accurate? Like just like there are books that end up in Geniza because they're inaccurate, maybe the manuscript is inaccurate. Point one. Point two. All of the Chachamim had one version of the Gemara. So that is the correct version of the Gemara from the sense of halacha, because that's what everyone had. Point three is that is a theological point. The theological point in the sense of Hashgachosu Yisparshal Teshtakach Tormi Yisrael Hegin Aleihem. God wants Torah not to be forgotten. How do I make sure Torah is not forgotten? Well, right? If you're going to... This is Torah, because God wanted this to be the Shas that's out there. It might be not the correct Shas based on the manuscript. It doesn't matter on a certain level. Because, says the Chazon Ish, right? God, theologically speaking, God wanted Torah to develop this way. God wanted Halacha to develop this way. This is Halacha, end of story. Now, the Chazon Ish could not possibly accept what Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said, that we should use a manuscript to generate possibilities that won't lead to Halacha. Because for the Chazon Ish, Gemara and Halacha are tzamut. Point one. Point two, the Chazon Ish's argument, whether it's an argument from what all the Chachamim say, whether it's an argument from theology, that this is Hashgachas Yisparach, whether it's like the philological argument, that who says this manuscript is correct, all of those arguments are extremely conservative. The Chazon Ish is very conservative. And this is one of the Chazon Ish's main tainas on the Mishnah Brura. Because it's not only about the Munich manuscript, the Chazon Ish was opposed to the use of all newly discovered Rishonim. If I find a Rabbeinu Prachya on Shabbos that no one had until now, I find the Rabbeinu David on Pesachim, or I find, to use a different term, a Me'iri. Now, usually people say this wrong. Now, I once heard from Dr. Chaim Salvechik, people say, oh, the Me'iri wasn't published until the 20th century. It's not true. There was a version of the Me'iri that was published in the 17th century. There is, if you look in Yisrael Toshma's article, Seder HaBasos HaMishor Rishonim, there was a version, the Me'iri was not completely unknown, but it wasn't available. Right? There was a printing of the Me'iri in the 17th century. It happened. And many of the Me'iris were known through the Shita Mekubetzes. But at the same time, Me'iri is not a well-known Rishon. Chazon Ish is opposed to the fact that the Mishnah Berurah is using new Rishonim. Mishnah Berurah is using Rabbi Nuchananos and Me'iris, especially in areas of Halacha like Erevin. The Mishnah Berurah earns a living off of this, no? This is bread and butter from Mishnah Berurah. New Rishonim. Chazon Ish says, don't give me new Rishonim. No way. Why not? Same reason he doesn't like the Munich manuscript. Because there is a certain Hashgachaso Yisparach, a divine sense. Rabbeinu Chananel
was one of the first Rishonim,
but it wasn't printed. Rabbeinu Chananel is a Goyin. He's earlier than Rishonim. But it wasn't printed, and it wasn't known. The Mishnah Berurah used it, and like the Chazon Ish writes, the text is off in Meshubash. Mishnah Berurah will use it. Well, halacha, no? Now, this became like a big deal. I'll just give you a few sources. Going over from the first page to the second page, in Erevin, this became a big deal. Now, the Mishnah's Yaakov wanted to pass all the Erevin in Europe. One of his cheshbonos was that you can't assume that we don't have a public thoroughfare because Shulchan Aruch says we don't have a public thoroughfare ticket, we need 600,000 people. So the Mishnah's Yaakov, well, most Rishonim assume that you don't need 600,000 people to be a public thoroughfare. And he counts only Rishonim, and most Rishonim assume his way. Well, that's involving using new Rishonim. That's using new Rishonim, isn't it? That's the way the Mishnah's Yaakov made his count. The Aruch HaShulchan, in his classic Aruch HaShulchan manner, he says, oh, Erevin are okay. Why? The minhag of Jews has always been to make an Erev. Aruch HaShulchan uses minhag. Mishnah Berurah is inclined that the Mishkanus Yankov is right, because new sources are usable. Chazon Ish, I don't know. I can't really use new sources, says the Chazon Ish. I have to figure out from the Gemara, does 600,000 people really have basis or not? Right? Again, it's a different methodology to halacha This, of course, is relevant for using archaeology lahalacha. It's relevant for like hours and hours of shiurim that we could give. But these are just some of the basic points that we wanted to make in terms of the Mishnah Berurah. So what we're saying is that the Mishnah Berurah is different than the Chazon Ish, in the sense that the Mishnah Berurah is a digest. Chazon Ish is not a digest. Chazon Ish is a work of his own halacha. And another difference is, do they use the new Rishonim? Now there is just a huge literature about the Chazon Ish and his opposition to the new manuscripts, or his opposition to the Dikduke Sofrim. There's a huge literature because the Chazon Ish himself was not so absolute, was not such a purist. The Chazon Ish himself amended texts pretty regularly. There was an article in Tradition Volume 18 where this Tzvi Yehuda, who was himself a student of the Chazon Ish, just tells you that I heard from my Rebbe the Chazon Ish, you can't use new manuscripts. Schneier Lyman wrote a rebuttal in Tradition, also Volume 18 in the Winter one, basically saying, what do you need? What do you do about all these other Chazon Ishes where he used new Svarim, etc.? Then Schneier Lyman suggests, well, maybe the Chazon Ish used new Svarim, but not Lahalacha. The Chazon Ish was opposed to turning Halacha over, but he would use new stuff, just not Lahalacha. I find that suggestion of Schneier Lyman to be incomprehensible, because for the Chazon Ish, well, you can't split between learning and Halacha. It's all the same. Impossible to split between them. What is the suggestion? What can we say in terms of all these contradictions in the Chazon Ish? So, Rabbi Yamin Zilber, who was also Makur for the Chazon Ish, I think it was just Nifter or something, like last year or something, no? He was Shemarichon Tzadik of the B'nai Brak. Rabbi Yamin Zilber writes just that the letters of the Chazon Ish can't be relied on at all because of what we began with tonight. We don't know who the letter is written to. We don't know exactly the context. The Chazon Ish, in the letter that has lots of ellipses, says, don't rely on the Munich manuscript. I really don't know what to do with it. I really don't know what the Chazon Ish is responding to. Now, I do know the Chazon Ish was not crazy about academic Talmud. That's for sure true. But that's not so surprising. Right? That's not so surprising. Again, so I think this is the last year that we're giving this summer on Halachic Men. I'm taking off a couple of weeks. I'm just tired. I thank you for listening, and the Mirza Shem will resume around a month from now. Thank you for listening. Have a good night. Thank you.